Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, December 19th, 2024. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Our front page articles today include Shocking Crimes Highlight 2024, Harassment Investigation Clears Navajo President, and Winter Market Offers Goods, Culture. The first article we're going to read is called Criminal Justice Year in Review. Noteworthy Cases and New Leaders Highlight Year by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff Reporter. In the realm of criminal justice, the past year brought conclusions in several high-profile cases. A highly visible clash between police and protesters at Northern Arizona University, and the confirmation of new leadership at law enforcement agencies and the county attorney's office. Here's a look back at some of the most notable stories about crime, courts, and law enforcement from 2024. Driver who hit bike party sentenced to 17 years. In January, Coconino County Superior Court presiding judge Ted Reed sentenced Normand Cloutier to 17 years in prison. Cloutier pleaded guilty in November 2023 to one count of negligent homicide and two counts of causing serious physical injury or death with a moving vehicle. He was the driver of the tow truck that struck Flagstaff Bike Party in May 2021, killing Joanna Wheaton and injuring four others. During the investigation following the collision, detectives discovered child pornography on Cloutier's phone. He was then indicted on 10 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor. As part of his plea agreement this year, he pleaded guilty to one count of sexual exploitation of a minor and one count of attempted sexual exploitation of a minor. Per the terms of his sentencing, Cloutier must serve the entirety of his 17-year sentence, register as a sex offender, and face lifetime probation upon his release from prison. For friends and family of Wheaton, the sentencing created complex and conflicting emotions, as she was an outspoken opponent of incarceration and the punitive justice system. The same prison where Mr. Cloutier will end up, or any prison for that matter, Joanna did not believe should exist, read a letter to the court submitted by Joanna's brother, Jonathan Wheaton. Rather, she believed that funds allocated for prisons and police should instead be used to proactively create societies where the harm doesn't happen in the first place. Flagstaff stunned by death of mother. On the evening of June 30th, police received a report that Flagstaff resident Kelly Pawduchowski was missing. The Coconino County Sheriff's Office began search and rescue efforts the next morning near the trailhead where her vehicle was found. FPD eventually arrested her husband, Daniel Pawduchowski, on the evening of July 1st and announced the next day that it was investigating the case as a potential homicide. The case progressed rapidly and drew significant attention. By the end of the week, Daniel pleaded guilty to second-degree murder, tampering with physical evidence, concealment of a dead body, and possession of dangerous drugs. As part of his plea agreement, he helped police locate Kelly's remains and the murder weapon. Daniel Pawduchowski received a sentence of 16 years in prison on October 16th. He will be required to serve the entirety of that sentence. The main goals of this resolution were to recover Kelly, ensure the defendant stays in prison until Kelly's children are grown, and avoid a trial that could prolong the family's pain, Coconino County Attorney Ammon Barker told the Arizona Daily Sun at the time of the sentencing. This case has certainly affected the Flagstaff community as a whole, Coconino County Superior Court Judge Joshua Steinlag said at the sentencing. I have ears. You walk around Flagstaff, it's a small community. When you actually live here, you hear people talking about this. It's something that has touched everyone in our community in one way or another. Case of child starvation death concluded after 4 years. The jury conviction of Anthony Martinez and guilty plea of Ann Martinez brought to an end to the prolonged case of starvation death of a six-year-old. Anthony Martinez, the victim's father, and Ann Martinez, Anthony's mother, and the victim's grandmother were arrested in March 2020, along with Elizabeth Archibek, the victim's mother. Anthony Martinez and Archibek had kept their six-year-old son and a seven-year-old brother confined to a bedroom closet 16 hours a day without access to food or water. Ann Martinez, the victim's grandmother, lived in the apartment with them. The couple also had two daughters who were 4 and 2 years old at the time of the crime. The three surviving siblings are in foster care together. On May 23rd, a jury found Anthony Martinez guilty of first-degree murder, child abuse, kidnapping, and aggravated assault. On June 25th, Ann Martinez pleaded guilty to one count of manslaughter and one count of attempted child abuse, foregoing a jury trial. Coconino County Superior Court presiding Judge Ted Reed sentenced Anthony Martinez to life in prison on June 28th. 2 months later, Reed sentenced Ann Martinez to 20 years in prison, drawing to a close more than 4 years of legal proceedings in the related cases. Archibek pleaded guilty to first-degree murder in May 2023 and received a life sentence without possibility of parole. Parents sentenced in death of infant. Flagstaff police arrested Kyle Holloman and Andrea Hernandez in March and April, respectively, following an investigation into the January death of their two-month-old child. According to the written testimony of a medical expert in the case, the child unmistakably suffered chronic and continued abuse. Initially charged with first-degree murder and two counts of child abuse, Holloman pleaded guilty in August to one count of manslaughter and one count of child abuse. In October, Coconino County Superior Court Judge Stacy Krueger handed Holloman a sentence of 16 years in prison, plus 3 years of supervised probation upon his release. Although Holloman expressed remorse at his sentencing hearing, Krueger found that the aggravating factors in the case, such as Holloman being in a position of trust, the victim being effectively defenseless, and Holloman having a history of prior child abuse, outweighed any mitigating factors. She imposed the maximum allowable prison sentence. Hernandez had also been charged with first-degree murder and two counts of child abuse, but she ultimately pleaded guilty to just a single count of child abuse. The court concluded that she was responsible for leaving the child in a situation likely to produce injury or death. Krueger sentenced Hernandez to 5 years of probation. Pro-Palestinian protesters at NAU arrested. On April 30th, Northern Arizona University Police Department officers, supported by Flagstaff Police Department officers and Coconino County Sheriff's deputies, forcefully removed an encampment set up by NAU students protesting the Israeli military's actions in Gaza. The encampment, a collection of tents on a grassy area behind the student union, was part of a nationwide movement against the U.S.-supported Israeli invasion of Gaza that followed an attack by Hamas militants from Gaza into Israeli territory on October 7, 2023. The NAU chapter of the group Students for Justice in Palestine organized the protest. NAU administrators told the students that protest activity would not be allowed after 10 p.m., which SJP described as arbitrary. At approximately 10:45 p.m., law enforcement officers used batons to break up a line of students standing with arms interlocked, arresting some protesters and scattering others. There were 24 individuals booked into the Coconino County Detention Facility that night on charges of third-degree trespassing. One person was also charged with failure to provide their name, and two people were charged with aggravated assault against a law enforcement officer. NAU then suspended the campus's chapter of SJP and further restricted the hours during which protests would be allowed. The majority of the individuals arrested ultimately received deferred prosecution, in which an offense may be dismissed after a combination of fines, education, and a period of law-abiding conduct, or were not prosecuted. The two students charged with felonies for assaulting a police officer were temporarily suspended and banned from campus. Gunshots at Bushmaster Park prompted lockdowns. Multiple schools near Bushmaster Park went into temporary lockdown while police searched for the person who fired a gun in the park on May 15th. Witnesses at the park told police that a man aggressively approached a group of people, demanded a cigarette, and fired a firearm multiple times into the ground. No injuries were reported. Thomas Elementary School was placed on lockdown, and shelter-in-place orders delayed students' normal dismissal times at Coconino High School, Flagstaff High School, Summit High School, Mount Eldon Middle School, Sanagua Middle School, and Puente de Hoyo Elementary. Flagstaff police arrested Alan K. French near the intersection of 4th Street and 6th Avenue later that afternoon. The charges against him from the Bushmaster Park incident and from an incident earlier that morning when he fired shots into the air near Brannan Circle and Lone Tree Road, include armed robbery with a deadly weapon, discharging a firearm within city limits, possession of a weapon by a prohibited person, and multiple counts of aggravated assault and disorderly conduct. French pleaded not guilty to all charges at his arraignment in June. His case has not yet been resolved, and he remains in custody. He also has multiple cases open in Flagstaff Municipal Court dating from April and May, including charges of obstructing a thoroughfare, theft, criminal damage, disorderly conduct, assault, and resisting arrest. Chief, sheriff, ride off into sunset. In March, the city of Flagstaff selected Sean Connolly to take over as police chief, replacing retiring Dan Musselman. Connolly, a graduate of NAU and the University of Arizona, spent 30 years with the 30 years with the Phoenix Police Department, rising to the rank of Operational Executive Assistant Police Chief. The other finalists for the position were Lieutenant Charles Hernandez II and FPD Deputy Police Chief Colin C., Captain Colin King of the Tucson Police Department, and Deputy Chief Kenneth Booker of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. Connolly began work on June 10th, with Musselman staying on until the end of June to provide continuity during the transition. Musselman became chief in December 2020 and retired after 28 years with the force. Meanwhile, Coconino County Sheriff Jim Driscoll will hand the reins of his office to current Chief Deputy Brett Axland on January 1st. Axland announced his candidacy for sheriff in May 2023 and ultimately ran unopposed in both the primary and general elections in 2024. Axland has been a sheriff's deputy for nearly 29 years and chief deputy for the past seven. He is a graduate of NAU and American Public University, as well as the Federal Bureau of Investigation National Academy. Driscoll's career in the sheriff's office spanned 50 years. He began as a deputy under former Sheriff Joe Richards in 1974 and was elected to the position in 2016. He served two terms and endorsed Axland as his replacement. New county attorney takes over. Incumbent Bill Ring decided not to seek re-election as county attorney this year, and no Republican candidates filed to run for office. That left Ammon Barker and Gary Perlmutter competing for the position in the Democratic primary in July. Barker, chief deputy under Ring, has worked for the Coconino County Attorney's Office for 14 years. Perlmutter is the Chief Operating Officer at the Southwest Center for Equal Justice and was formerly the Director of the Legal Defender's Office from 2025 to 2019. He ran against Ring in the 2016 election for county attorney, but lost by approximately 200 votes. This year's election was not as close, as Barker secured 58% of votes in the Democratic primary, and with that, the role of county attorney. In early October, Ring resigned from the position, and the Coconino County Board of Supervisors appointed Barker to take over for the last months of Ring's term. Barker will be formally sworn in on January 1st. Ring was then appointed to lead the office's civil division, with some other attorneys in the office shifting roles as well. CCC briefly closed after online threats. On September 14th, Coconino Community College temporarily closed all three of its campuses, two in Flagstaff and one in Page, in response to threatening electronic communications. "We are prioritizing the safety of our employees and our students and making sure that we have a safe environment for everyone," Sandra Hinsky, CCC's provost and vice president, said that afternoon. FPD identified the source of the threats as Justin Wayne Hill of Ash Fork and requested the public's help in locating him. Hill was arrested in Bozeman, Montana the next day through the cooperative efforts of Flagstaff's law enforcement agencies, the FBI, the U.S. Marshals Service, and Bozeman Police. CCC reopened its campuses and resumed normal activities on Monday, September 16th. The Coconino County Attorney's Office charged Hill with 17 counts of making or communicating a terrorism threat between August 31st and September 14th. According to the indictment, Hill threatened not only CCC, but also Flagstaff Medical Center, multiple preschool and elementary schools, a pharmacy, and a gym. On December 2nd, Hill was extradited from the custody of the Gallatin County Sheriff's Office in Montana back to Flagstaff and booked into the Coconino County Detention Facility. His next court appearance is scheduled for January 6, 2025. Suspicious death investigated after suspect witnessed loading body into car. FPD received a report of a man placing an unconscious woman into a car outside a hotel on South Beulah Boulevard on the afternoon of October 1st. Officers stopped the vehicle on Milton Road and began resuscitation efforts on the woman, but she was ultimately pronounced dead at the scene by emergency personnel. The deceased woman was later identified as Sandy Singer, 38, of Tonalea, Arizona. Tonalea, also known as Red Lake, is a small community on U.S. Route 160 within the Navajo Reservation, approximately 100 miles northeast of Flagstaff. Police questioned the driver of the vehicle, Samuel Lionel Lee, but did not arrest him at that time. Officers and detectives processed a crime scene at the Comfort Inn on Beulah Boulevard that afternoon, where the report originated. Simultaneously, officers, detectives, and the Coconino County Medical Examiner's Office responded to the Canyon Inn Motel along Milton Road, where the vehicle was stopped and Singer was located in the vehicle. A trio of search warrants were filed against Lee in Flagstaff Justice Court on October 2nd, followed by formal charges of second-degree murder and sexual assault fired on October 8th. Lee was arrested 10 days later on Friday, October 18th. He remains in custody in the Coconino County Detention Facility and will next appear in court in January. And that article, first one from the front page, was titled Criminal Justice Year in Review, Noteworthy Cases and New Leaders Highlight Year. And that was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. Moving along to our second front page article today, we have an article called Harassment Investigation Clears Navajo President and Stokes New Wave of Political Upheaval. And this is written by Morgan Lee of the Associated Press. Political turmoil erupted within one of the largest Native American tribes in the U.S. as the Attorney General for the Navajo Nation announced that an investigation had cleared tribal president of sexual harassment allegations by the vice president. Even as a result of the investigation were announced Monday, Navajo Nation Attorney General Ethel Branch was removed from office by the Navajo Nation Council in a 13-6 vote without public discussion or a reason outlined in the legislation. The tribe had been has been mired in political upheaval since April, when Navajo Vice President Richelle Montoya publicly outlined allegations of intimidation and sexual harassment against President Bu'u Nigrin, stemming from interactions at an August 2023 meeting in Nigrin's office. Outside counsel investigated the allegations and found the incident doesn't constitute sexual harassment under tribal policies and is not a crime under tribal law, according to an excerpt of the findings. Nygren expressed vindication and described a need to heal from this and focus on moving forward. But he also warned that the removal of the Attorney General without a clear explanation sends a message of political instability, with implications for major government ventures. Branch, a Harvard-educated attorney who served a previous stint as Attorney General under Navajo President Russell Begay, recently worked on a proposed settlement that would ensure water rights for the Navajo Nation and two other tribes in the drought-stricken Southwest, and regulations aimed at safe transportation of radioactive materials across the reservation. Navajo Vice President Michelle Montoya said she is eager to read the full investigative report once it's released publicly. She said she's heard from an avalanche of people who have endured harassing behavior in tribal government workplace settings. Then I'll know what definition they utilized to say that I wasn't sexually harassed, Montoya told the Associated Press. I do know that the council and the people of the Navajo Nation have been frustrated with this reservation. Branch said she was satisfied that no rock was left unturned in the search for evidence of any potential wrongdoing in the harassment investigation by outside counsel. I do not believe that it is in the best interest of the Navajo Nation to continue spending the nation's money on allegations that, even if taken as true, would not amount to any violation of Navajo law, Branch said. I encourage any Navajo employee who feels they have been subjected to sexual harassment to report it. But Branch also announced the termination of contracts with the law firm for outside counsel in the harassment probe, expressing frustration at an inordinate delay in completion of the investigation that exacerbated the instability in Navajo government that the allegations induced. And that article was titled Harassment Investigation Clears Navajo President and Stokes New Wave of Political Upheaval. You're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand. From our website, choose Broadcast Info and Audio, then On Demand. Moving on to our third front page article, we have the Museum of Northern Arizona hosts 6th Annual Winter Market and Open House by Jessel Ortigon, special to the Daily Sun. On December 7th and 8th, the Museum of Northern Arizona hosted its Winter Market and Open House, showcasing 25 indigenous artists from across the Colorado Plateau. Sponsored by Arizona Public Service, the museum offered free admission for locals and visitors of Flagstaff to come shop at the market and support a variety of indigenous vendors. The Museum of Northern Arizona, MNA, has brought together Native American artists since its opening in 1928. Compared to the Heritage Festival of Arts and Culture, another noteworthy event hosted by the museum, the Winter Market is smaller and features seasonal items to appeal to holiday shoppers. Since 2018, the Winter Market has been another opportunity for Native artists to display and sell their original pieces, from paintings to pottery. Jessica Lomatiwama is a weaver from the Third Mesa area from the village of Ahotavia and has been working on her artistry for over 40 years. Lometuama said she first learned how to weave for ceremonial purposes, then started entering native art markets to gain some extra income from her work. She said it has been an opportunity not only to support herself, but also to educate others on her culture and learn about their tribes. A lot of these types of baskets are not shown, she said. I am probably one of two of the Third Mesa ladies that go to different art markets across the country to exhibit our work and culture. Attending events like the Winter Market has allowed her to connect with other indigenous artists and learn about cultures. Lometuama said that though weaving has become expensive and is time-consuming, she is happy to sell even just one of her baskets so others can appreciate the attention that goes into each piece. I've been weaving for over 40 years, and for me, it's been a labor of love, Lometuama said. Also in attendance was the nonprofit Zuni Youth Enrichment Program, ZYEP, selling chili jerky, baked goods, and other Pueblo traditional delicacies. ZYEP takes students through a 10-week apprenticeship that teaches them how to participate in cultural activities. This time around, the students worked on Pueblo cooking, from traditional to contemporary dishes that they got to sell on their own at the winter market. Elroy Natachu Jr. is the art coordinator for ZYEP and said MNA has worked closely with the program, showcasing various art apprenticeships, and is a place where the younger generation can become inspired. This is a perfect venue that encompasses all the Native American tribes in the Colorado Plateau, Natachu said. This program has been key to teaching students cultural resilience and building strong intergenerational connections to ensure that future leaders know their history and continue to feel supported. Natachu said events like the Winter Market show MNA's ability to bring together a range of artists that creates a diversity within the space, and added that he hopes it influences his students to expand their careers beyond the apprenticeship. It's a good hub where you can learn from one another in a supportive environment, Natachu said. Focusing on Indigenous artists and supporting their work has been a long-standing tradition for the museum, said MNA marketing specialist Nancy Wycheck, and is significant to the prominent Indigenous community in Flagstaff. Wycheck said Mary Russell Ferrell Colton, co-founder of the museum, started organizing events in 1930, celebrating the arts and culture of all tribes of the Colorado Plateau, starting with the Hopi Market. Colton's goal when working with Native American artists was to bring wider recognition and acceptance to their work. The museum continues this legacy by showcasing and promoting Indigenous art and artists of the Colorado Plateau in exhibits, markets, education programs, and within our collection, Wycheck said. These efforts help support the artists and foster cultural preservation, education, and community connection. And that article was called Museum of Northern Arizona Hosts 6th Annual Winter Market and Open House by Giselle Ortigon, special to the Daily Sun. Next, we're moving on to the local and Arizona page, where we're going to start by reading a few news briefs. The first one is called County Elections Department Receives Prestigious Award by by Daily Sun staff. The Coconino County Elections Department announced Monday it has received the People's Choice Award from the Election Center, National Association for Election Officials, for its Bridging Communities Through Accountability, Security, and Civic Engagement Program. The award, according to the county's press release, recognizes outstanding contributions to election administration and highlights the department's commitment to serving the community with excellence and integrity. Coconino County's winning program focused on strengthening trust and participation through enhanced security measures, transparent processes, and robust civic engagement initiatives tailored to meet the unique needs of its diverse communities, the release said. The People's Choice Award gives election professionals nationwide the opportunity to vote for their peers' exceptional projects. Coconino County Elections Department remains committed to continuous improvement, transparency, and collaboration in election administration. Eslir Musta, Coconino Elections Director and Assistant County Manager, said in the release. This award affirms our County Board of Supervisors' vision for free, fair, and accessible elections. We are glad to share our experience advancing the professionalism of the elections field. The award will be officially presented at the Election Center's February conference in Little Rock, Arkansas, where Coconino election staff will also have the opportunity to share their work with other election professionals from across the country. The next news brief is called Navajo Gaming and Knackered Pepsi Announce Exclusive Partnership. A new partnership between Navajo Gaming and Knackered Pepsi and PepsiCo will bring Pepsi beverages to the four Navajo gaming casinos in New Mexico and Arizona, including Blue Arrow's Navajo Blue Travel Plaza. We are proud to sponsor with Knackered Pepsi and PepsiCo, said Navajo Gaming CEO John James. Their diverse portfolio ensures there is the perfect beverage for each guest and every occasion as it smoothly integrates with our high-caliber menus. Together, we ensure local, national, and international guests have a vast selection of offerings during each visit to our resort, casinos, and travel center. According to a press release on the partnership, Knackered Pepsi, headquartered in Flagstaff, was established in 1943 and provides industry-leading soft drinks, energy drinks, teas, sports drinks, coffees, juices, and bottled waters. The company operates throughout northern Arizona with additional locations in Prescott and Sholo. And the other news brief is titled Blackwater Nygren is the first Navajo woman to be named top prosecutor in Arizona's Apache County. This one's by the Associated Press. Jasmine Blackwater Nygren is the new Apache County attorney, becoming the first Navajo woman to hold the position. The County Board of Supervisors held a special meeting Monday to appoint a new county attorney following the vacancy left by Michael Whiting, who has been accused of misusing public monies and threatening and intimidating a political opponent. Blackwater Nygren, 29, is a former Arizona legislator and is the wife of Navajo Nation President Boo Nygren. Whiting won re-election last month but cannot serve because he has been suspended from practicing law since November 1st. The board removed Whiting from office earlier this year, but not before the deadline to be on the 2024 ballot. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays served as acting Apache County Attorney before Blackwater Nygren was sworn in Monday. Blackwater Nygren, who earned a law degree from Stanford, was among three candidates considered. She will serve as county attorney until the 2026 election, when the position will be on the ballot. Blackwater Nygren said she will recuse herself from any conflicts involving the Navajo Nation because of her First Lady status. Around 70% of Apache County is part of the Navajo Nation, which is the county's largest reservation at more than 16 million acres and spans areas of northeastern Arizona, northwestern New Mexico, and southeastern Utah. And those were some news briefs for today. Also here on the Local in Arizona page, we have an article that is called Community Health Matters, Make 2025 a Healthy Year. And this article comes from Northern Arizona Healthcare. As we are about to enter a new year, many people may have already started thinking about New Year's resolutions. We at Northern Arizona Healthcare, NAH, want members of our community to achieve their goals in the healthiest way possible. Resolutions can be difficult to keep when people follow their natural tendencies to set unrealistic goals that lack a concrete plan to attain them. If the progress isn't made in the time frame the person initially anticipated, it's easy to slip back into old habits, with or without realizing it. NAH recommends setting goals that are easy to maintain, because even small changes can have a large impact on your health. New Year's resolution number one from Ryan Guy, NAH Entire Care Rehab and Sports Medicine Outpatient Therapy System Manager and Physical Therapist. Exercise regularly. Fitness has always been a popular New Year's resolution. We recommend setting SMART goals for yourself. SMART stands for specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. We encourage our patients and community members to set smaller, obtainable goals when it comes to fitness and build on those. It's also important to look for ways to make exercise fun or social, such as incorporating a new sport or taking a walk with a friend, which can improve consistency in new exercise habits. Everyone's goals are different, which is why setting your own personal SMART goal is a beneficial mindset to help you achieve your fitness resolution. New Year's resolution number two from Jillian Peart, NAH Inspire registered dietitian. Eat for longevity. Does your resolve to feel healthier involve food? Dietary changes are most successful when we start small. For example, if your goal is to be heart healthy, instead of cleaning out your fridge to start a new high-fiber diet, dinner each week feels more sustainable. Adding fiber to your diet has been proven to reduce the risk of heart disease, according to the American Heart Association. These small dietary goals are meant to be progressive, so your next level can be for two high-fiber meals per week. When setting these goals, remember to start small, make it fit your lifestyle, and continue to enjoy eating for health. New Year's resolution number three from Dr. John B. Martin, NAH psychologist, reduce stress. When setting your goals for a new year, reducing stress should be at the top of the list. Stress can affect not only your mental health, but your physical health as well. When looking at ways to reduce your stress, getting more sleep is extremely important, just as it is integral to your overall health as diet and exercise are. Experts recommend that adults sleep between 7 and 9 hours a night. Establishing a relaxing bedtime routine and limiting screen time before you go to sleep can help you get the sleep that you need. When people are getting proper amount of quality sleep, it boosts their immune system and gives their mind time to rest and recharge. Set realistic expectations for yourself and others when it comes to your schedule. You can give yourself permission to say no. Be kind to yourself and make sure to take time to relax. NAH resolution. At NAH, our resolution remains unchanged as we remain ever committed to our mission of improving health and healing people. NAH is committed to serving this community in 2025 and the decades to come. Caring is our best medicine, and we apply that philosophy when caring for patients in our facilities and also while serving our community. We are constantly looking at ways we can improve ourselves, and we strive to give exceptional care to every patient, every time. Flagstaff Medical Center, FMC, was recently awarded an A grade in hospital safety by the LeapFrog Group. And we are proud of this external validation of the work we do every day to provide safe care. The LeapFrog Hospital Safety Grade provides data and research to help patients make informed decisions about a critical aspect of their hospital stay, safety. A hospital may have the best surgeons and the greatest technology in the world, but unless it is preventing infections and eliminating errors, it is not delivering on a very basic premise, ensuring the safety of a patient and their loved ones. Out of 50 hospitals in Arizona rated by the LeapFrog Group, only 14 of them received an A grade, including FMC and NAH's Verde Valley Medical Center in Cottonwood. To receive an A from this support group shows that NAH is dedicated to providing the highest quality care to the community by putting patients first. And they have a little thing that says, we want to hear from you, please send questions to NAH or healthcare in general to cmh@nahealth.com. We will choose one question per month and one of our experts at NAH will answer the question in this column. We at NAH want to wish our community a happy and healthy new year. That article was called Community Health Matters. Make 2025 a healthy year. And here is the last of the articles on the Arizona local and Arizona page, and its header says State and Regional. It's titled, Biden Adds to the Nation's List of National Monuments During His Term. There's an Appetite for More. And this is written by Susan Montoya Bryan of the Associated Press. U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt did it in 1906, but Congress was unwilling to do through legislation. He used his new authority under the Antiquities Act to designate Devil's Tower in Wyoming as the first national monument. Then came Antiquities Act protections for the Petrified Forest in Arizona, Chaco Canyon, and the Gila Cliff dwellings in New Mexico, the Grand Canyon, Death Valley in California, and what are now Zion and Bryce Canyon National Parks in Utah. The list goes on, but all three presidents have used the act to protect unique landscapes and cultural resources. President Joe Biden has created 6 national monuments and either restored, enlarged, or modified boundaries for a handful of others. Native American tribes and conservation groups are pressing for more designations before he leaves office. The proposals range from an area dotted with palm trees and petroglyphs in Southern California to a site sacred to Native Americans in Nevada's high desert, a historic Black neighborhood in Oklahoma, and a homestead in Maine that belonged to the family of Frances Perkins, the nation's first female cabinet member. Looting and destruction. Roosevelt signed the Antiquities Act after a generation of lobbying by educators and scientists who wanted to protect sites from commercial artifact looting and haphazard collecting by individuals. It was the first law in the U.S. to establish legal procedures for cultural and natural resources of historic or scientific interest on national lands. For Roosevelt and others, science was behind safeguarding Devil's Tower. Scientists have long theorized about how once molten lava cooled and formed the massive columns that make up the geologic wonder. Narratives among Native American tribes who still conduct ceremonies there detail its formation. Biden cited the spiritual, cultural, and prehistoric legacy of the Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante areas in southern Utah when he restored their boundaries and protections through his first use of the Antiquities Act in 2021. The 2 monuments were among 29 that President Barack Obama created while in office. Amid concerns that Obama overstepped his authority and limited energy development, President Donald Trump rolled back their size while adding a previously unprotected portion to Bear's Ears. Biden called Bear's Ears the first national monument to be established at the request of a federally recognized tribe, is a place of healing. Saving sacred spaces. Early designations often pushed tribes from their ancestral homelands. In one of his final acts as president in 1933, Herbert Hoover used the Antiquities Act to set aside Death Valley as a national monument. It's now one of the largest national parks, not to mention the hottest, driest, and lowest. While establishing the monument brought an end to prospecting and the filing of new mining claims for the area, it also meant the Timbisha Shoshone were forced from the last bit of their traditional territory. It took several decades for the tribe to regain a fraction of the land. Biden's administration has made strides in working with some tribes on managing public lands and incorporating more indigenous knowledge into planning and policymaking. Avikwaame National Monument was Biden's second designation. The site outside of Las Vegas is central to the creation stories of tribes with ties to that land. Republican Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo said at the time that the White House didn't consult his administration before making the designation in 2023 and in effect blocked the clean energy projects and other development on the state. Similar opposition bubbled up when Biden designated Bajnuah Navajo Itakuvani National Monument in Arizona just months later. This time it wasn't the prospect of clean energy projects sprouting up in the desert, but rather uranium mining near the Grand Canyon that had tribes and environmentalists pushing for protections. Biden certainly didn't break any records with the number of monuments he designed or the amount of land set aside. But conservationists say more strategic use of the authority under the Antiquities Act will be valuable going forward as developers look to build more solar and wind farms and mine for lithium and other minerals required for a green energy transition. They are pushing Bush. I'm sorry, not Bush. They are pushing for Biden in his final weeks to expand California's Joshua Tree National Park and establish a new monument that would stretch from Joshua Tree to the Colorado River, where it divides California and Arizona. The proposed Chuckwalla National Monument has the support of several tribes. Such a designation would add significant peace to one of the largest contiguous protected corridors in the U.S., spanning thousands of square miles along the Colorado border, the Colorado River, from canyonlands in Utah through the monuments already designated by Obama and Biden to the desert oases of Southern California. The concern out there is that so much land is getting used for renewable energy and it just kills the desert completely. And so if we're not more proactive about protecting these places in the desert, we could lose them forever. And that article was titled, Biden Adds to the Nation's List of National Monuments During His Term. And that's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey, and thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Throw your log on, Uncle John.
To Uncle John.